All right, welcome. So my name is Tim Guile, one of the guiding teachers here at Seattle Insight. And so this evening we'll start with a meditation for about 40 minutes. For a little bit of guidance to start us off, we'll have a short break, and then I'll offer a talk on wise concentration, tips and the hindrances. A poem called Solstice by Robin Sarah. A sigh gift this is, that on the year's shortest day, the sun stays longest in this house, extends the wand of its slow slant and distant squint farthest into the long depths of our wintry rooms to touch with tremulous light interior places that has not lit before. Solstice by Robin Sarah. All right, so this is our final two talks on concentration, which is this last bit of the Eightfold Path, which is the last bit of the Four Noble Truths. So we've been spending the whole year exploring the Four Noble Truths. And this time of year is a really fascinating time because we have the natural quiet and stillness, you know, the darkness, the short days, that just invites us to be more internal. And then juxtaposes the intensity of the season, of the holidays. If you celebrate Christmas, or even if you don't, it's hard not to be affected by the energy and the excitement, kind of the National Lampoon's a Christmas vacation kind of excitement. You know, that just kind of manic energy sometimes just permeates everything. And concentration, then, is one of those factors which can really serve us in this time, a chance to settle, to start to develop some connection, to help us find a place of ballast in the midst of all this turbulence, all this busyness in our lives. And, you know, I encourage us to cultivate compassion, or not compassion. Compassion's good too, but concentration. I'm a little tired, so the busyness is getting to me also. So excuse me when I stumble over some words here. So concentration is one of those factors that it does take a little bit of energy to develop. At the same time, if I said, okay, concentrate, you know, the way we are programmed to hear that word, you know, we really bear down, we furrow our brows, we get tight around it, you know, concentrate, focus. That's kind of the energy that comes up for me around that word. While concentration from this wise perspective, from the meditative perspective, is very different. It's a much quieter, much more receptive quality. So tonight I'd like to share some tips around concentration, how to cultivate it, that I've found helpful over all these years of practice, and also how the hindrances interface with that. So concentration, as I started off the sit with, is sometimes we think, okay, I've got to get concentrated. I've got to focus on my concentration. We often see that, especially on meditative retreats, like residential multi-day retreats. We think, okay, I've got to concentrate. And we sit down and we start to find how busy our minds really are, how turbulent they are. And perhaps your daily life practice, this kind of sums it up. You know, you sit down, anyone find that your mind is just really busy? When you first start to sit, it doesn't quiet down right away, or it doesn't seem like it's ever going to quiet down. You're just gripped by thoughts and worries and fantasies, and or if that's not happening, you're falling asleep. You know, there's these, it's really hard sometimes to develop that concentration. I think of it, one way to think of it really is like we're preparing the ground or the soil to receive concentration, these seeds of concentration that really grow on their own accord. And if we don't prepare that soil, then they don't really grow very well. You know, if there's lots of rocks, if there's weeds, if it's not, you know, well balanced in terms of nutrients, And so we do the same thing with our own minds as we start to cultivate concentration. Because if we jump in without that cultivation or without preparation, then we often are disappointed. Our minds just stay busy and we get more frustrated or exhausted in that process of cultivating it. Now, one of the big things that kind of get in the way of concentration or is opposing concentration are the hindrances. Okay, the hindrances are in some ways a very basic teaching, and we cover those in the intro classes. But also there's a teaching that is also very deep. It's also very significant for us as human beings with our minds. Think back to the time of the Buddha and his light of awakening. He was confronted with the hindrances. They were kind of externalized in the mythology of that time. But it's really his internal mind was bringing forth these hindrances of craving, desire, of aversion, of sloth and torpor, of restlessness, and doubt. And these kind of try to throw him off his seat, but yet he continued to practice and was able to awaken in a very deep way. So the hindrances, I think sometimes we hear the teachings around it, but we don't often recognize that in the midst of our practice. I know some teacher was advising that before we start to practice, just notice if the hindrances are present and what kinds they are. So by doing that, you're actually stepping back and observing what your mind is doing, observing what is present. And that's one of my favorite ways I like to prepare for practice, and I often instruct that way. Instead of just diving right into the meditation, just grabbing hold of the breath, it's more of noticing, what is this mind and body doing? I mean, you just spent a whole day awake for most of us, right? That had an impact on us. You know, maybe the day was really peaceful and easy. Maybe, you know, people prepared your food for you. Or maybe it was full of a lot of difficulty, a lot of struggle. Maybe there's heartache. Maybe there's disappointment. You know, this time of year, there's often grief that resurfaces. Or maybe the first time we really are confronted with the loss of loved ones. So it's not always this kind of merry, happy kind of time of year. And sometimes it's a very difficult time. And if we ignore that, if we try to pretend it's not there, it doesn't make it go away. It just, it's still there. And it kind of it throws us off our practice, throws us off the capacity to have concentration arise. So just a couple moments of noticing, what is this body like? What's this mind like? What's the shape of this mind? This is really the fourth foundation of mindfulness. What is the mind? You know, what's the presence of hindrances? Are they there or not there? The fourth foundation of mindfulness. Now, the hindrances, if you step back and observe them this way, it helps you not be so lost in them. Right? That's a very simple fact that we often overlook. But the fact of observing something means there's a little bit of perspective with it. That little bit of perspective gives us the space to act more skillfully around it. That's why we emphasize mindfulness so much. Mindfulness of emotions, mindfulness of impulses to act, of mindfulness of reactivity, mindfulness of the body. All these give you a little bit of space between the habitual action, gives you a choice of how you act in relationship to it. Now, just from a broad perspective, if you look at the hindrances, some are more activating. They kind of arouse your energy. So like craving or aversion, it can really get the mind going. A lot of these show up in our mental activity. You know, we're thinking about something, we're fantasizing about something. Or to say the aversive side or the worry side. You know, we're worrying about what's going to happen in the future. Are we going to be able to make it through this situation? What's going to happen to our lives, to our country, to our world? There's all these worries that are very much... There's a lot of thoughts around it. You know, there's a lot of facts around that. They're driving that. But all that shows up in the moment as this kind of churning that happens, this movement away from this present moment. And sometimes it has a very aversive quality, sometimes more of a craving quality. Sometimes it's just this worrying, this proliferation of thought. So all those tend to activate us a bit. There's also some which kind of dull us, kind of knock us down, make us more subdued. So sloth and torpor are the classics. That dullness of attention, that kind of disconnection, that kind of fogginess, right? And physiologically, we often bounce back between those two. We get hyperactivated, or we get repressed. We get knocked down. You know? So it's kind of noticing that momentum. And of course, doubt is one of those ones that really take the energy away from us. We're just not sure. We're confused. So observing what hindrance is there. And at that point, we have kind of a choice of how we meet it in terms of moving toward concentration. How do we start to prepare this ground with whatever hindrance is there? It's not your fault that it's there. It's just there's conditions that have arose around it. Sometimes we have some influence over it, right? We could pick some kind of media. We could read a story. We could have interaction that's going to really churn us up a bit. Right, or get our minds craving around something. So sometimes those choices are important. But we basically have this choice of how do we work with the hindrances. This is all in terms of how do we move toward concentration. Basically, we can either kind of move through it or power through it, if you will. The other one is to work with the hindrance. Both, I think, are helpful. It's helpful to have both of those in our repertoire. Because it changes over time, and it also changes on the situation. And I use both of these all the time. So powering through, all right? So this is more kind of a dramatic way of saying of simply staying the course. You know, just continue to practice, even as the hindrance is arising. Like if we're piloting a ship, and there's a big storm we're going through, we're trying to hold a particular bearing, we just keep that bearing there. Waves are coming, you know, winds knocking us off our feet, but we keep going that same direction. That's the model that the Buddha used on the night of his awakening, that he touched the earth to affirm his right to awaken, his right to be here. So this quality of powering through is sometimes really what's necessary, what's the most helpful. One way this works is with the distracted mind. You know, the mind, we're trained to be really distracted by the media, by television, by our phones. You know, we're taught to really look at the next thing that's going to catch our attention. There's not this sustained quality of simply being with life in a very simple, direct, immediate way. So one phrase you sometimes see in the suttas is this guarding of the sense gates, guarding of the sense doors. So there's a way of kind of closing down, not as a way of contraction, but more of like limiting what you're paying attention to. That's why we often suggest closing your eyes when you're practicing. That's not required by any means, but closing your eyes does decrease some of that sense data. You just have the internal stuff that's going on, body and breathing. Another technique that I learned, this is one that I learned in the first year of my practice, back in 96, I believe it was. So it was a technique, it was a course on meditation, insight meditation, by Shizen Young, who's kind of a Zen, Vipassana, you know, combination teacher, you know, really well respected. It was on cassette tape, if that gives you a sense of the age of it. I don't think CDs were even invented then. But anyway, so he had this interesting way of describing noting. So I gave you a little bit of a noting practice to start us off. So this is this sense of powering through. So I'm trying to practice. Mind's really active. I'm thinking about this. Maybe there's worry. Maybe there's fantasy. Maybe there's just agitation. Maybe I'm sleepy. So it basically gives more of a scaffolding around our practice. It gives more structure around our practice. I love to teach more of that open awareness, that quality of choiceless awareness, that natural awareness, because I think that cultivates this insight, quality for insights to arise, you're available for life how it is, which we'll get to that in a little bit later. But the mind is pretty persistent. You know, the mind likes to think pretty strongly. You know, how many times in the day do you have a thought? I think someone somehow recorded it as like 10,000 or something. There's a lot of thoughts going through our heads. And so we try to turn off that right away. It doesn't work so well. So what you do in noting is you give the mind something to do, right? And Shizen Young had this really nice analogy of a of a car with different gears, right? So you say you're driving around, it's snowing, you know, maybe it'll snow someplace here in the Pacific Northwest this winter. You're stuck in the snow, you want to go into a four-wheel drive, right? And use that to get out of that stuck spot. So that's when our minds are just so persistent, it's so heavy. And what that looks like is actually noting out loud, right? So this is, of course, more appropriate when you're by yourself and not so much in the hall or in a retreat setting. But I use this a lot early on. I just say breathing in, breathing out. I mean, actually say it out loud. That brings a lot more energy to the noting. And if I'm starting to say breathing out and I'm breathing in, I know that, okay, I'm out of sync. I'm not really connected. So that gives me that little bit of feedback. It brings more energy to the practice. But after you kind of get out of that stuck spot, you can go into first gear. Maybe you drop the out loud part, but you're still noting, I am breathing in, I'm breathing out. Right? Then you start to go get faster, get on a side road, and then you go to second gear. So maybe you drop, I'm breathing in, to just breathing, or just in and just out. And then eventually you drop it when you get on the freeway. So in that way, you can kind of stack up or measure or kind of increase and decrease the amount of effort, the amount of structure you have in the meditation. This is a powerful way to start to develop concentration. Also helps to kind of burn through the hindrance that might be present, right? So well, I'm using this, it's kind of a strong way to say it, but this powering through or burning through hindrances is that sometimes they just arise out of nowhere. You know, sometimes there are our actions, and sometimes our system is just kind of, that's the kind of system we're living with. And in complaining about the fact that hindrance is there, it's like complaining that, why is it raining today? You know, it's just, this is the time of year that it rains, or this is the conditions that came together with that particular state of mind or that mind state that turns into a hindrance. It's just, how do we practice with it is the question. How do we meet that in a way that actually allows us to deepen around it? Another way to work with this kind of moving through the hindrance, the hindrance is still going on, that storm is still going on, but I'm just going to just practice, I'm just going to keep practicing, is to have a specific, like a body scan is actually nice to do. So go through maybe, okay, I'm going to focus on my left hand. I'm going to feel the fingertips for a few moments or minutes, and I'm going to move into my palm. And so I'm giving myself, it makes it more interesting. It's more directed, right? So that scaffolding, that framework, allows you to start to have something you can focus on. You can go through the whole body in that way or just focus on one part of the body. So these are a couple ways to kind of move through that hindrance. Other side of it is more working with the hindrance, right? So this is a very different way of working with it. So this is when the hindrance is, sometimes it's a shifting of the energy to kind of to rebalance ourselves. Sometimes it's a quality of investigation to understand what's underneath the hindrance. So shifting the energy, this is one I like to do too. If I sit down, I'm practicing, I just feel like my mind is just, it just, you often know, you get this feedback as you practice and it just like the, it's not going very smoothly, right? It's just not falling into place. The mind's distracted, you're falling asleep, or maybe you're really worried about something, maybe you're anticipating something. One of my ways I like to do this is just, I open my eyes. This is really nice if you're practicing outside, which I love to do. I just open my eyes and take in nature in a very soft, receptive way that helps to broaden my attention. Because if we could like look at ourselves from an energetic way, we almost like we get narrowed down, we're fighting with this hindrance or this hindrance is gripping our mind. Like we drop it and affirm the connection, affirm nature that's around us through our visual input. We open to it, we experience it. And let the body kind of soften, let the mind soften around that. This is going to a broader awareness. If you're trying to focus on maybe one part of the breath, maybe open to a bigger part of the body, feel the whole body, or switch to sound. Something that makes the attention more receptive, more spacious, right? Instead of tight. Because concentration, we sometimes tie ourselves in knots trying to get concentrated. And sometimes you're trying to force it. And if you just backed off a little bit, the concentration will follow, happen much more naturally. Related to this, of working with it, is investigation. So investigation, again, it can be a kind of, we can sometimes think of it as this intellectual kind of thing, like we have the image of all the detective movies where they put all the pictures on the wall and all the yarns going everywhere. That's not really what I mean by investigation. It's more a moment by moment revealing of what's here. Almost like we had a flashlight and we're just going through the interior of our experience and shining our light at different aspects. Okay, there's that sensation of the body. Oh, there's a belief system that's connected to that. Oh, there's a memory, or there's an attitude. But I'm not conjuring it up. I'm not thinking my way through it. I'm allowing them to reveal themselves to me. I'm seeing them in a direct way. All right, so one way to do this with hindrances is, what does it actually feel like to be sleepy? Have you ever played with that? What does it feel like when the sleepiness moves through the body? Where does it start? Does it start with behind the eyes? Does it start behind the head? What does that quality feel like? What does craving feel like if you release the object of the craving and notice the actual experience of it? The same thing with aversion. Worry is a great one to play with this. Restlessness and worry. There's an energy of it. And if we kind of separate or divorce the idea or the content, we can feel it as a direct, generic experience. And that starts to transform it. That starts to really change it. And so these are all ways to play with the hindrances. It's like preparing the ground to accept, to allow concentration to start to grow. So once the hindrances seem to have kind of dissipated or quieted down at least, then we can start to move toward, how do we cultivate concentration itself? Now, concentration, I want to just talk a second about the difference between the state of concentration and what seeing deeply that comes from concentration. Okay, so the state of concentration is a little seductive because it feels like, well, I'm really doing this. You know, this is, I'm like a star meditator here. I feel really calm. I feel, you know, feel really steady. I feel this sense of deep peace. You know, the hindrances feel far away. You know, nothing really is arising. There's just this steadiness of attention, right? And this, in our physiology, you know, we can monitor and see that physiology is really changing. Heart rate's dropping, blood pressure's dropping. But it's a state. So states are impermanent. States are going to come and go. They're induced by practice, by certain things. And we can sometimes go down this trap of trying to chase those states. Right. So if you've ever had a really good meditative experience or a really good meditative retreat, have you ever wanted to get back to that place? You know, and that's like that chasing that state, chasing that experience. And sometimes there's a lot of suffering that comes from that, because the next retreat or the next experience probably won't be the same because conditions are different. But there's the learning, there's the seeing. That's really the point of concentration, especially wise concentration. Wise concentration or right concentration signifies it's part of this Eightfold Path, which is really geared to eliminating or seeing through the unnecessary suffering of our lives, awakening our hearts. That's the path leading to the awakening, leading to the fourth noble or the third noble truth. That's it's really its definition. That's its whole purpose. So that seeing, so a state, we can be attached to the state, we cannot be attached to the state, but the state doesn't necessarily move us toward understanding the nature of our suffering. But the seeing can. The seeing, the direct seeing can. Like the book, The Seeing That Frees. So concentration, I talked about this in the first part of the month. It can have this range. It can be this one-pointed focus, right? That everything else is let go except for that one thing. It's like everything is being let go except maybe this one point of the breath or this one part of the body or this one image, depending on the type of meditation you might be doing. And so by definition, you're excluding everything else except that one point of experience. Like the noting technique I talked about, that's one way to cultivate that one-pointed focus. That cultivates concentration. But it doesn't necessarily connect, allow us to have that deeper seeing because it's isolating everything. So what I'm suggesting is use those more structured techniques when they're necessary to develop that concentration, but then back off and use the seeing that's there. Use the quality of clarity that's cultivated by the steadiness. So concentration can also have this more general quality of simply being present, like in the middle of this inner experience, you're just able to observe things arising and passing away. There's a quality of being deeply connected to the present moment. There's no narrative or very little narrative, very little reaction or activity around it, but you're also very clearly seeing things arising and passing away. This is a non-clinging quality of attachment, or of attention, I should say. So what does concentration do? What's the point of this, this seeing? So I want to read a section here from Joseph Goldstein's book called One Dharma, where he looks at all the different expressions of Dharma across the different, the three main schools and seeing the commonality behind all of them. But he's using an example from the naturalist world. And this man named Louis Assagi was a Swedish-born naturalist who helped train his students of careful observation. Okay, so this is along these lines of seeing. So what he would do when he trained someone, he would give them this exercise. He would present the student with a dead fish, usually a very long dead, pickled, evil-smelling specimen, personally selected by the master from one of the wide-mouthed jars that lined his shelves. The fish was placed before the student in a tin pan. He was to look at the fish. The student was told, whereupon Azagi would leave, not to return till later in the day, if at all. So Samuel Scudder, one of the many from the school who had gone to do important work, describes this experience as one of his life's most memorable turning points. Right? So this is in relationship to concentration. Concentration allows us to see more clearly. But I'm trying to point out too that concentration is, it's not, the seeing isn't always a smooth process. Sometimes there's a lot of hindrances that get kicked up by the very act of trying to see more clearly. So in 10 minutes, I'd seen all that could be seen in that fish. Half an hour passed, an hour, another hour. The fish began to look loathsome. I turned over and around. I looked at his face, ghastly, from behind, beneath, above, sideways, at three-quarters view, just as ghastly. I was in despair. I might not use a magnifying glass. Instruments of all kinds were forbidden. My two hands, my two eyes, and the fish. It seemed a most limited feel. I pushed my finger down the throat to feel how sharp the teeth were. I began to count the scales in different rows until I was convinced that was nonsense. At last, a happy thought struck me. I would draw the fish, and now, with surprise, I began to discover new features in the fish. When Azagi returned later and listened to Scudder recount what he had observed, his only comment was that the young man must look again. I was mortified. Still more of that wretched fish. But now I set myself to my task with a will and discovered one new thing after another. The afternoon passed quickly, and toward its close, the professor inquired, "Do you see it yet?" "No," I replied. "I'm certain I do not, but I see how little I saw before." The day followed, having thought of the fish most of the night, Shudder had a brainstorm. The fish, he announced to the teacher, had symmetrical sides with paired organs. Of course. Asagi said, obviously pleased. Scudder asked what he might do next, and Asagi replied, "Oh, look at your fish." So in Scudder's case, the lesson lasted a full 3 days. "Look, look, look," was a repeated injunction, and the best lesson he ever had. So concentration allows us to look. As we look, sometimes we don't like what we're seeing. Sometimes we're bored. Anyone ever get bored in meditation? It's like, what is there more to feel about this breath? This is so boring. There's something so much more interesting just in my pocket if I just pull out my phone, right? It's like, it's so enticing, right? But that perseverance to stay with it, that's part of what bolsters concentration. That's what makes it work. It's because often we see something initially, we don't see it very fully. Or even worse, we see it through our lens of prejudice, our preconceptions, our ideas of how we think it should be, how we should be in relationship to it. So concentration inherently has a level of patience with it, a level of perseverance to be able to be with this, to be next to it, to open to it, to see it in a more and more full, deep way. The reason we do that is that by seeing directly, that's where insights arise. Okay, so this is called Insight Meditation. It's in our name, Seattle Insight. Seattle Insight Meditation Center or Society. Now, insight is something that reorders you and the world. What I mean by that, it reorders your assumptions. It reorders your how you took yourself to be and how you thought you would be. And you see things in a very different way. It might be in a small way or it might be in a very significant way. And anyone who's been practicing for a while, if you really talk to them, you start to see how the world's seen a little bit differently. Maybe one of the basic ones, but yet really important ones, is you don't believe your thoughts as much. You see that the thoughts are just kind of coming and going. And you're also starting to learn a different way of connecting with life through the direct present moment. That's outside of thoughts, outside of concepts. And there's so many other insights we can describe and explore. But an insight, when it's really a strong insight or a powerful one, it does reorder these basic assumptions. It's almost like you've had this set of premises you built your whole life around that suddenly you realize aren't as solid or even as valid or accurate as you thought they were. And in that reordering, sometimes it's a little bit of a crisis because it's like, who and what am I if I don't follow those? But yet there's also this sense, and sometimes a direct, showing up in our lives, that we act a little bit differently. There's a more ease that happens, not because we intended to, but because we just naturally come up. So if you do celebrate the holidays, or if you're around friends and family, give space for that to emerge. Start to notice how you might be a little bit different around those loved ones. Because often our family, I mean, they hold our, of course, our love and appreciation, but they also hold sometimes our trauma and all these other things that come up, right? There's a lot of patterns that are embedded in there. And sometimes just being around those people, it starts to bring those patterns up. But you might find that some of those patterns are more optional than they've ever been. There's a different way that shows up, a possibility that arises from that. And this is why the Eightfold Path is such a beautiful expression, that it's not just, he doesn't say just go meditate and they'll figure it out. Meditate, but also cultivate your wisdom and also cultivate how you act in the world. So this quality of seeing, concentration is, as this little story implies, that some of these deeper levels of things that we're seeing sometimes are painful. Or sometimes we're in the midst of something painful. How do we meet that? How do we open to that? Just today, I went to the library, and I was going to change my library card. And the librarian, who's someone I see in the neighborhood, she lives in the area, she walks a dog, I walk my dog, we say hi to each other. Okay, that's kind of, it's a friendly relationship, but that's about it. And I asked her about her dogs, and one of her dog had just died. And she went into this story about what happened to the dog and the passing and the difficulty around that. And, I'm standing here in the library with, never had this kind of intimate conversation with this person before, but I think it was important for her to hear that. And it was important for me to hear it too. And this is an expression of concentration. How do I stay in the midst of being here in my body as I'm listening to this painful story? But also this kind of the sweetness of the love for this animal. How do you stay in the midst of that? How do you, feeling that the eyes tear up, and is that okay in this situation with this stranger, with this public place, but yet there's this human connection. So that's what I mean by kind of holding that course. That's where this starts to come back in. We start to meditate. And when I say start to meditate, maybe each of your days of meditation, you may have to do this. You start to meditate, you calm down, that you maybe stay through the hindrances. But then once you start to develop concentration, the hindrances are still going to arise through doubt or how should I be. But you hold this course. In this case, it was of connection, of being willing to listen and be there in the midst of her pain and her sorrow around it. And that's something that we really are starved of in our many of us in our lives, that someone can really listen to us, to really receive us, to not try to demand us to be something else, but actually create space for that. And this is a powerful gift you can give complete strangers, you can give your loved ones, and you learn it by doing that for yourself, by listening deeply to yourself, to be listening to those voices and those aspects of yourself that you've shunned, that you've shunted away, that you've pushed away, to let those be felt, let those be experienced. And this is also what concentration does. It starts to, sometimes it's almost like your system is saying, okay, this person is finally listening to me. This person is finally paying attention. And concentration is that willingness to be in the midst of, to be willing to listen deeply. Now, concentration, as you hopefully start to get a sense, there's this interesting balance of effort that's needed, effort and ease around it. Because if we push and strive too much around trying to get concentration, it kind of rebounds against us. It's almost like we're forcing our minds, forcing the meditation to look a certain way. It's a little bit, there's a little bit of inner violence around that, that sometimes the system rebels and pushes back. And that's not very helpful. This is counterproductive. At the same time, we also need a certain willingness or diligence to be with, to turn toward and connect with. So that's also needed. This poem by Joyce Something speaks to that a little bit, how to listen. Tilt your head slightly to one side and lift your eyebrows expectantly. Ask questions. Delve into the subject at hand or let things come randomly. Don't expect answers. Forget everything you've ever done. Make no comparisons. Simply listen. Listen with your eyes as if the story you're hearing is happening right now. Listen without blinking, as if a move might frighten the truth away forever. Don't attempt to copy anything down. Don't bring a camera or a recorder. This is your chance to listen carefully. Your whole life might depend upon what you hear. How to Listen by Joyce Something. So this quality of diligence, this willingness to move through the hindrance, is essential. It's a really important piece. And we also know when we have to shift the energy, find a different way of balancing. And unfortunately, I can't tell you here's the three ways you can tell which one to do. You kind of have to do it by trial and error. And that's part of what develops as you practice more and more. You'll learn, okay, I'm trying this way, it's not working. Let me try a different way. Let me open my eyes. Let me shift to something else. I was trying to go through it and I just kept getting capsized by that intensity. But eventually, ultimately, concentration is not something we can push into. We can't force it to happen. It's not by us directing our attention, but it's much more about relaxing into, allowing things to come to you. So when you start to feel that, okay, hindrances are quiet, the mind's starting to get more steady, I'm connecting with the breath, at that point, the effort becomes much more of relaxing into, almost surrendering into it. It's like if you're going into a hot bath, it's a little bit uncomfortable, but you're relaxing into it. You're letting it yourself sink into this sensation, into this breath, into this sound. Right? So this is what's happening is your mind and body are starting to unify around that experience. There's trying to be this steadiness that's coming from that. Not from forcing it, not by pushing it, but by relaxing into it, by releasing into it. And I would just end with a poem that kind of points to this. This is called Finding a Teacher by W.S. Merwin. In the woods, I came upon an old friend fishing, and I asked him a question. And he said, "Wait." Fish were rising in the deep stream, but his line was not stirring. But I waited. It was a question about the sun, about my two eyes, my ears, my mouth, my heart, the earth with its four seasons, my feet, where I was standing, where I was going. It slipped through my hands as though it were water into the river. It flowed under the trees. It sank under hulls far away. And it was gone without me. And then where I stood, night fell. I no longer knew what I had to ask. I could tell that his line had no hook. I understood that I was to stay and eat with him. It's a different expression of concentration. All right, let's just sit quietly for a couple moments, letting those words settle. Taking what's helpful, letting go of what's not. Okay, so in a moment we'll open to any questions, both online or in person. But I want to talk about the homework. So this is an opportunity this next week to bring it. I know it's a busy week. There's holidays. There's all kinds of stuff that goes with that. But yet it might be a really good time to create a little space for practice, to keep that place in your mind, place to cultivate this. So the homework basically follows along with the talk, that cultivate concentration this week by first preparing the soil. And online, I put that in the chat. So Kathy, if you don't mind reposting that, just so they have it handy, or Tamara can do that too. Thank you. So think about the soil. How do I prepare the soil? So a lot of this is around the presence of the hindrances. And work with them or work through them. You know, maybe you're going to be, I'm just going to hold my course with them. See what, so we can learn from that. Now, once the hindrance resides or quiets a little bit, cultivate concentration through relaxation and reception, or probably should say receptivity, instead of striving and not pushing. Okay, so it's not pushing, it's not striving, it's a reception or receptivity. Focus on the clear seeing that concentration allows. So that clear seeing, that's what starts to kind of bring back energy back into concentration. That starts to make it kind of, instead of you having to put energy into it, the clear seeing itself starts to bring the energy forth. Staying the course through the ways of resistance, and then in a direct, immediate way, see something that reorders you and your life. All right, so a small little thing to practice with. So next week, you can bring a 10-page paper about that. Now, next week, seriously, though, next week we'll have a discussion on this. So those, if you're joining us for the first time, roughly every other week, we'll do a recap talk. So it'll be like a 20-minute talk around this topic, then a chance for you to dialogue around it. And this is such an important way to express your understanding and support each other in your growth understanding. So space for any questions or sharing. So online you can raise your virtual hand, and in the room we can raise your physical hand.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. So I think my question is about I don't know if it's about concentration. Historically, I've always meditated with, simple anchors like the breath or the body, sometimes sound, things like that. And recently, I've started experimenting with, okay, well, what if I let go of that and I try to have just kind of like a more open awareness and just like take in the world. I don't know. But what I've noticed is you used the image of a flashlight earlier, and I was like, that's what it is. It feels, still feels like my awareness is like, okay, so we'll focus on the, okay, we'll focus on it. And it's like it can't let go of having something to focus on.
Yes.
And just like relax back and just take things in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious about it. I feel like I'm trying to move actually away from concentration, and my brain is really determined to keep concentrating. That's kind of how it feels to me. And I'm just curious if you could speak to that at all.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's a common experience, and it's, you know, Will articulated what goes on with that. So that, you know, it's also just, you know, to affirm that you're practicing well to be able to see all that dynamic. You can see, okay, the mind's doing, wants to concentrate. I'm trying to be more open. So there's kind of two schools of thought that come to mind around that. So Uche Janiya actually starts people off with more of that open awareness, and that's kind of the way he cultivates that. And then over time, there's a steadiness that comes from that. Kind of the tradition that I tend to practice and teach in is kind of more of that, okay, let's first learn how to focus on one thing, right, just like you described. But then there's this important transition into this more open awareness. And one of the big linchpin around that is just how you described, like that flashlight. You know, there's a sense of I'm shining my light here and there, right? And okay, how do I shine on everything all at once, right? And just give me one thing to focus on, right? But if you kind of looked a little more deeper at that, part of that is your sense of you as the meditator is having this activity of focusing on something, shining the light, shining the attention. And so to transition into this more open awareness, one gateway into that is instead of you focusing your light on something, you can just focus like your breath, like you normally do, one pick one thing, but reverse it. So like letting it come to you. Does that make sense? So you're not so active in, okay, I got to focus on this, but you're letting the breath come to you. You're letting the sounds come to you. So it seems like a subtle shift, but it's a very important shift. And what that does is starts to soften the sense, the activity that the meditator is doing, the sense of you as the meditator. From that place of letting it come to you, it's actually, then you're already most of the way there. Then you're just open to everything coming to you. See the difference?
Yeah, thank you. That's very helpful.
You're welcome. Yeah. All right, yes.
Hi, team. Thank you for the talk. I have two questions. The first one is when you talked about the state of concentration, when you feel like very deep and concentrated. So, all right, let's not get attached to that. It can change. It can maybe never come back.
Yes.
When you get there, do you... Well, I guess it's not bad, but should you use that moment for like a better purpose rather than just being there? Like, should you look deeper at hindrances that maybe you are being free of, or do you? Is there something like you could use that moment for like for better use than just being?
All right, so that's the first question.
Yeah,
what's the second one?
The second question is so this one is a bit different. So. With Christmas coming, I mean, holidays, we're going to see like friends and family. And I've seen in the past when I talk with family or friends about my practice, it's extremely hard to convey what I'm learning or what I'm going through or without sounding like a bit like, I don't know, crazy or it's, I guess I don't have the right words or I have the wrong right to explain it as well as like you do or like it is in books. So I'm wondering if you have a thought on that, if maybe something to avoid until it's clearer for everyone, or still try to do it. The last few times it just felt a bit awkward, and I'm like, I'm not sure I want to keep trying to explain until I feel I can clearly explain it.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, sometimes I like to hear both questions because sometimes they meld together. But yeah, those do feel fairly distinct. So the first piece around, you know, once you kind of move through the hindrances and you feel like there's level concentration, how to use that to the best of benefit. You know, I think there can be a lot of benefit for just staying in the concentrated state for a while, to kind of let that settle, or kind of develop that muscleness, muscle of concentration, to allow that to kind of stabilize more and more. So that's perfectly fine to do that. You can also kind of just start to notice, it's like you kind of let go of the power, maybe the anchor that you used to get to the concentration, and you're kind of noticing, okay, what's going on in this whole thing, right? And sometimes you can look at it from a particular lens. Like sometimes I use the lens of the five aggregates, and maybe sankharas could be a very specific lens. Could be something like clinging. It could be, maybe there's something emotional. Maybe there's this heartache, or maybe there's this sorrow or this grief or this fear. And then I use concentration, that stability of seeing, to turn toward that. And it's not like I'm going to switch into the intellect while I'm turning toward it. It's more like I'm using that stability to see it in a more full way, a more complete way. And that can be very helpful. Especially, and ideally, it's nice if you can stay with it long enough that there's like this, oh, I didn't realize this was part of it. I didn't realize that this was an aspect of it. And that's what I mean by kind of reordering yourself and your life. And that often helps unhook some of these more tenacious patterns by bringing concentration to it and a lot of patience with it, that can unhook some of the things you just didn't realize about it. That could be something that sometimes it's in the middle, like one meditation session, it may be over months or sometimes years even. You just keep coming back to this. Because a lot of these real tenacious patterns, I mean, we can look at it from a psychological perspective. There's some real deep family origin stuff, some deep conditioning, some deep ways of how we form our psyche around it. From a Buddhist perspective, there's just these deep levels of conditioning. There's a deep level of delusion that keeps that intact. So it takes a while, it takes a lot of patience to be able to be with it. But just like this example of the fish, okay, I'm going to meet this, I'm going to be with it, and notice what's arising from it. And you're not trying to make something arise, you're trusting it's going to arise of its own. That's an important piece. Now the second question, like, how do you talk about this? How do you talk about what you're experiencing and articulate it? I use the same answer on retreats when I teach a residential retreat, because people sometimes ask, how do I talk about this experience? I suggest that you really pay attention to the person who's asking it. So they say, oh, what are you doing these days? Well, I do a lot of meditation. And they say, oh, that's nice. You know, then you kind of leave it at that. You don't delve into the details. But if they say, oh, what kind of meditation, and what are you learning from that? Then you can kind of let them tell you how interested they are. Because from the outside, from the world with all these exciting, compelling, thrilling things, it's kind of boring what we do here, right? I mean, for us, it's not boring, because you can see that this is a potential for transforming the deepest level of my suffering in a profound way. You know, and there's this compassion that comes forth from that. And so sometimes you might say that I'm just learning to see myself in a different way. I'm learning to understand myself in a different way. And this is, you know, one of the benefits when I started teaching back in 2006, is like, okay, how do I translate my understanding in a way that makes sense to like beginners, or a way that actually, and so you can play with that, maybe play with analogies, you know, and that's can be a fun way, you know, find an analogy that really resonates with you. The Buddha was famous for doing that. He would do lots of analogies to describe complex things. So, you know, find something that's meaningful for you, if it's really important for you to share it, and see if you can come up with some imagery or some idea. Like, you know, it's like you're listening to a radio station, and you suddenly realize that there's other stations or something like that. You know, something that's like, oh, that kind of makes sense. So it's, you're not going to be able to describe it, because it's really an experiential thing. But you can give people a sense of how it's meaningful and transforms you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I just recently had one of, I call them earthquakes,
of learning.
Okay, earthquake's nice.
Yeah. What happens for me is I'll be concentrated and I will see something and I'll just see it. And then I get up, I'm moving around, I'm talking to someone and it's like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's that pattern, there it is. So it's kind of a, it's, well, it's all the same thing, but it was, it's just always so fascinating when your mind brings it up again. And to me, that's what I have benefited the most from is, oh, and it, because I've looked at it in a concentrated, relaxed state, first of all, it's, I'm not clutching my chest and this is a terrible thing. But it just comes up and there's a bit of ease around it.
That's right. Yeah, I think I'm glad you said that because it points to a nature of insight. And for myself, it's often that way too, is that during the practice itself, you know, there's kind of a steadiness, a calmness, there's this, you're seeing things in a more clear way, and it may feel profound, but, you know, it's also just kind of held. Because you're concentrated, the mind's just kind of, it has an equanimity with it too. It's like, it's not like, oh, great, you know, you're not jumping off yelling at everybody. Sometimes that happens, but there's kind of this sense of just seeing more clearly. But it's in our life. And it's almost like we have this, sometimes I think of it as almost a kind of like a mechanism. There's all these gears that usually the way I act, and suddenly one of those gears is gone.
Mm.
And I'm like, I see myself, and then wait, that connects to that scene. Mm-hmm. And then that's what I mean by that reordering or the earthquake of life, is that suddenly you realize that this pattern that's I've been kind of imprisoned with my whole life, I have this freedom. It's like suddenly the door is open.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that until it actually shows up in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since we often frame these kind of earthquakes as being negative habits or patterns, through metta and then concentrating, I have seen the best part of me.
Mm.
And that has been the most wonderful part is going, oh, and it really is as simple as I'm a human being and this is what it is. So I'm just telling you my experience.
I appreciate that. That's beautiful. Yeah, that's one way we could just sum up all these words. It's just we're learning to be fully human, be fully ourselves. To have the best part of ourselves, you know, the one that's naturally compassionate, naturally kind, naturally wise. Thank you for sharing that. All right, anyone else? All right, go ahead, Kathy, our intrepid tech support.
It's a learning curve. you hinted at something that's intriguing to me, Tim. Just a second ago, talking about going along in life and, you know, things come at us so fast most of the time or there's so much to absorb. But can you think of ways that we might bring a little more presence or open mind to the benefit of concentration to, just a daily activities?
Hmm. Let me ask you a question back, Kathy. What seems to be the easiest way for you to be naturally present?
Naturally present. Well, I'm either really interested in something or I'm really, really interested or having a fun interaction with a stranger or feeling into my body, just feeling kind of internally quiet for a second.
Hmm. Yeah, especially the last one, you just create a little bit of space to feel that internal quiet. You know, like for myself, that internal quiet is really helpful, and also the connection with nature. Like, I find myself, like, you know, one of my brothers was visiting, and there's a lot of stuff we were doing, but just, okay, waiting for people to come out of the house, just, you know, taking a couple moments to just look at the clouds, to look at the trees, and to really take that in. And it helps for myself that the beauty of nature, the stillness of nature, helps me reconnect with that in myself. Yeah, and then there's that, you know, like the interactions, that curiosity, or like follow that, and then you naturally find that you're being more connected and more present. I like to use, you know, concentration in a broad way. You know, there's the real meditative kind of absorptive quality, but there's also just the sense of being present, of being paying attention, and curiosity, deeply curiosity, that sense of interest in people, that's beautiful gateways into that presence.
Great. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Kathy. Okay, go ahead, Charlotte.
Thank you. Okay, so when we started talking about concentration earlier this month, I was like, I don't get it. I don't know what this means other than what I'm trying to do, like the way I'm trying to stay present any other time that I'm meditating. But then when the conversation progressed and like you've talked about right concentration, like when you're navigating the hindrances, then it started to make a little more sense to me. It was like that steadiness and commitment to seeing or to being, you know, in that moment, in when I'm navigating something like one of the hindrances. But my question is, can you describe a little more about like when it doesn't have to do with navigating something complicated, like when in the absence of those things, what that right concentration is or feels like? Is it just the commitment to that steadiness or to the seeing?
Or... Wait, so you, I kind of lost the word, kind of a little garbled there. Is it like a what?
Oh, I was just asking whether in the absence of those things, if the right concentration is the commitment to the steadiness or the commitment to the like softness and receptivity and openness to things as they arise.
You know, the commitment to it is kind of maybe the wise intention or the wise effort that makes concentration possible. But concentration, it's ideally it becomes something that's kind of sustained. It's kind of like this stable quality. So I'll just kind of say out loud my inner experience of concentration as I'm talking to you. If I focus on the breath, there's a quality of everything else is receding except this one contact on this breath. And there's a quality of the attention being very intimate and steady with, it's almost like it's really connected to this experience of the breath going in and the breath going out. As a quality of kind of unwaveringness, that basically nothing else is there except that one breath, the one experience of breathing. And thoughts just don't have much purchase. They don't have much capacity to interest the attention. There's just, it's almost like it's just this one experience of this breath going out, this breath going in. Does that help a little bit?
It does help. Thank you.
You're welcome. One way to think about concentration is just basically more stable mindfulness, mindfulness that's a little bit more sustained quality. All right. Anyone else have anything else to ask or share? Yeah, go ahead, Deborah.
Yeah, I had a question about preparing the soil, and some of us have been working with the arrival sequence, and I wonder if that's sort of the same thing.
The arrival, tell me what the arrival sequence is.
It's a Philip Moffat thing, getting ready, starting to when you get ready to begin meditating, to spend a little time just sort of making sure you're there.
You know, I'm not familiar with that sequence, but I would almost bet it is exactly that. Yeah, exactly. It's like anything that prepares us to practice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Philip is so, he's such a genius of this kind of the technology of meditation and ways to kind of, you know, get things set up. Yeah, so it's probably exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm a gardener, so I really appreciate your metaphor of preparing the soil. That's good.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, beautiful. And then you get the soil right and you plant the seeds and then you just be patient. You know. Just be patient. And you're okay, there's a weed growing. Okay, take that weed out. It's getting a little dry. But you know, it's like the concentration starts to grow on its own. Yeah. And just like, you know, with a garden, if its conditions are right, the plants are gonna take off at some point. And you know, your job is just to gently shape them a little bit or harvest it eventually. Yeah, great, thank you. Yeah, I think that's right along these lines. I wish I knew all the teachings everywhere, but that's, yeah. Knowing what I know of Philip, I think that's exactly right. All right, anyone else like to ask or share anything? All right, Cheryl.
I could share something real quick. I have noticed that in my practice, the more concentrated that I am, the more equanimity I have in my life, and the more skillful I can be generally. And the more I can catch that pause, the more that I can, I mean, I'm really noticing that this is starting to have that more contentment, even when things aren't going well. And that was actually a Philip Moffitt retreat last January when things with the website started blowing up. And I don't know how I got through that retreat, but it was a retreat on contentment, and I was really angry, and I was finding contentment at the same time. It was kind of weird. So, yeah, I think it's kind of amazing, you know, that this is, it takes a long time. And the Philip thing is like arriving, becoming available to the Dhamma, and aligning with something. And it might be metta, it might be, you know, right intention, right view, might be anything, you know, like that. So the immediacy of the present moment right here.
Yeah, beautiful. So. Yeah, the hindrances are said to really, they kind of abate when we're in a state of concentration. So it's interesting, I talked a lot about concentration, hindrances in terms of something to work with or work through to get to concentration. Once concentration starts going, the hindrances just don't have as much root or capacity to really stick to us. And that's a nice example in real life that, okay, a lot of frustration, but yet there's contentment. There's this quality of equanimity that grows. Yeah, and that's an interesting, if there's a way we could measure our baseline concentration, it does change. You know, there's a way that we become more steady, more present, and, you know, the hindrances or other, I mean, using hindrances really broadly, you can use them, you know, we could talk about reactivity, all these different patterns, but they just don't stick in the same way. Yeah, because our minds actually prefer being concentrated.
Yeah. One other thing, I had an opportunity to have a text, and I talked about this a little bit yesterday with some other people, to have a text going back and forth with my brother, and it happened almost all, it was like all day. Mm-hmm. And he was in, he was in this really hateful place. He was in a really, you know, wanting place, and I was trying to explain the Dharma to him. So that's what I said. And he was not getting it. So, but you know what? I got the book Kind Carl today, and it is about my brother, and I want to send him this book. You got to get this book. I'm telling you, it's Sharon Salzberg. It's a children's book.
It's called Kind
Carl. It's called Kind Carl, and it's about a crocodile who lives in Orlando who has a bad temper. Right. it's like I've gotten about halfway through it. I can't wait to finish it. Yeah, yeah.
That's so great. So Sharon Salzberg's new book. Yeah. That's great. Okay, Kind Carl. There's still a few more days before Christmas.
Okay. I just realized something that, you know, I've had this incident with my family. and
at first it was just a tsunami. But I'm sitting here tonight going, oh, this is, I'm calm in this storm that normally would be, you know, like overtaking me, overwhelming me. But it's like, huh. So resting back, resting down, and just, you know, not trying to do something, let it rise. It's like, oh, wow. So anyway, just thought I'd share
that. Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Leslie. It's, sometimes we feel like, oh, the practice isn't really doing much, you know, just meditating, da, da, da. But then life is often, that's when we really see the fruits of it. We see, wow, this, I'm really different in this tsunami of this family dynamic. And that's the practice. You know, things have changed. Yeah, beautiful. All right, well, thank you all. And if you celebrate the holiday, may I wish you some ease and happiness. And if you don't celebrate the holiday, may you find some ease and happiness too in the stillness that's all over the landscape this time of year. All right, thank you all. Thank you online. Nice to have you here. And thank you all in the room. All right, goodbye, everyone.